Welcome to the Leaders in Payments podcast, where we talk to C-level leaders from across the payments landscape. We'll be discussing the products and services that impact the payment space today, as well as trends and predictions for the future of payments. We will also hear stories from our guests about their journeys to the top.
We offer a holistic product set. So whereas we may have competitors in different verticals, as I mentioned before, we have no competitors that I'm aware of that offer the holistic products that we offer today. So when you come to Crossover for a lending program and you want to expand that to offer cards and then facilitate payments and then offer deposit accounts, you can do that not only with the same bank, Crossover, but on the same APIs that are all connected to the same core.
That was Adam Goler, EVP and Head of Fintech Banking at Crossover Bank. And he is my special guest on this episode, episode 316 of the Leaders in Payments podcast, and I'm your host, Greg Myers. Crossover's API-driven banking infrastructure embeds financial services across industries and provides the foundation for regulatory compliance upon which their partners grow. Adam and I take a deep dive into Crossover, including what makes it different and unique in the marketplace. We also discuss how and why it was started and the pivots that they've made over the years. We've got a great episode ahead, so let's get started. Hi, Adam. Thank you for being here and welcome to the Leaders in Payments podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. It's really a pleasure to be here.
Great. So let's go ahead and dive right in. If you don't mind, tell our audience a little bit about yourself, maybe where you grew up, where you went to school, where you currently live, a few things like that.
Sure. I'm not sure how interesting that will be, but I'll try my best. So I'm actually a New Yorker, born and bred, and really never left. I grew up on Long Island. I'm actually one of two children. I'm a twin, actually. I have a twin brother. Grew up on Long Island, and I really never left. I got married after college and spent 4 years at a local college in Manhattan. And then I got married right after that and moved right away to Queens within New York. And then shortly thereafter, 4.5 years later, moved back to Long Island with my wife and bought our first house. And so raised our five children in Long Island. And so born and bred New Yorker, never really left. I think outside of a sort of my family life where I have five amazing children and an amazing wife, I'm also an active athlete. I play tennis and I'm a big runner and enjoy a lot of time away from the office as well.
Awesome. Well, let's talk about Crossover. So tell the audience what Crossover does.
Sure. So Crossover is actually pretty interesting. So we were formed in the last recession, really 2008 in the crisis, and really with the idea of being a little bit of a different type of bank. So we're a bank like any other bank. We're FDIC insured. We're state chartered. However, we operate in a very different model. The bank's focus is enabling banking products for non-banks. What that really means is that we're a B2B enterprise. We focus on finding interesting platforms in various verticals of banking that are looking to offer a service to their end user. And we enable that through our licensing and technology. So as an example, a platform who has a really good acquisition strategy for acquiring customers for, let's say, point of sale loans, we can facilitate those loans through our licensing and technology, as well as our regulatory infrastructure. That applies to payments, it applies to deposits, it applies to cards. So essentially, you can think of us like a middleware or a technology layer between customer-facing platforms and banking products.
Okay. So can consumers or businesses open a traditional bank account?
Of course. So that's actually one of the more unique things about Crossover, and I should highlight that. So aside from being a technology enabler, we're also a bank like any other bank. So if you want to come to the bank and apply for an SBA loan, or you want to come to the bank and get a commercial real estate loan, if you want to open a retail CD at our branch, you can do that. So we actually do merge the traditional banking with the technology-enabled banking. And that's what's sort of unique about us. Most folks in the fintech space have chosen that path exclusively. And many folks in the more traditional banking space have chosen that path exclusively. Crossover is a hybrid of the two, enabling direct transactions, while it also focuses on enabling transactions at scale using our technology.
Okay. And you mentioned, the technology aspect a couple of times, and fintechs is sort of the customer. Is there a certain sector or sectors within fintech, or can it be basically any type of fintech company?
Sure. So that's actually a really important point that you make. I think whereas historically we've focused more on the consumer and have enabled a lot of consumer loans and consumer payments, consumer card and consumer deposit accounts, we do a lot on the small business front as well. We're enabling small business loans every day. We're enabling cards to be issued for small businesses. We're processing payments for small businesses every day. We're also offering deposit accounts for small businesses through our technology platforms. So I think that we serve the consumers and small businesses alike, noting that historically we have done a lot more on the consumer side.
Okay. And how big is the company?
Company on a balance sheet standpoint, it's about $7.5 billion in assets. That's one measure. I think the other important point is that we're also approximately 800 people, and that staff goes across two different continents. We have most of our staff in America, but a good portion of our staff is actually in Israel, and that's where most of our tech folks live. And so we have a lot of technology that's built, maintained, and developed in Israel.
Okay. And is your customer base international or just in the U.S.?
Today, we serve mostly domestic customers within the United States with a limited activity outside the United States. Obviously, our aspiration is to become more of an international company and serve the same clientele for enabling international transactions as well.
And your sort of go-to-market strategy, do you have a sales team that works this, or do you work through partnership channels? How do you go to market?
A great question. So all of the above, we have a sales team. So maybe describing the organization, we have those two channels I mentioned before. We have the more traditional banking group as well as the fintech banking group. Within fintech banking, which is the focus of here, we do have a sales team that's outbound that looks for unique platforms that offer products we want to enable. In addition, we have a lot of inbound leads that come in through our VC investors, through our board, and others as well who know us from the industry. We have a reputation we've built as far as being a technology forward organization, one that thinks a little bit differently. And so whereas we have an outbound strategy and an outbound sales force, we do get a fair number of leads that come in just organically through different channels of our board and others.
Okay, great. What would you say differentiates you from your competitors out there?
So we get this question a lot. I think there's a lot of folks in this space. I think we compete in every vertical we're in. But a lot of people in different business lines like to say we have no competition. The opposite. We have a ton of competition. What's unique about CrossRiver is that our competition is really focused on different verticals. And so when I think about our competition on the payment side or on the lending side, on the deposit side, on the card side, it's fierce. There's a lot of folks in this space. It's competitive from a pricing standpoint, competitive from a product standpoint. What makes us different is two things in my mind. One, we offer a holistic product set. So whereas we may have competitors in different verticals, as I mentioned before, we have no competitors that I'm aware of that offer the holistic products that we offer today. So when you come to CrossRiver for a lending program and you want to expand that to offer cards and then facilitate payments and then offer deposit accounts, you can do that not only with the same bank, CrossRiver, but on the same APIs that are all connected to the same core. That's really unique about us. The other main thing that's really, really important to understand, and this is very different than most of the folks in our space, is that we truly are a technology company. I mentioned before the size of our development team abroad, but that's actually true. Not only do we build things like a technology company, but we're actually, our mentality, our creativity is that of a technology company. So when you're a tech company or a unique platform and you're facing customers, you're offering a really unique UX, matching yourself with a bank that traditionally is known for being slower and stodgier, having more stale or maybe more generic technology, it's really important to think about what future scale looks like. And working with a bank like CrossRiver, who has not only its own developers and engineers, but a tech forward approach, is really important. So those two things in summation, I would say the tech forward approach and the technology embedded in the bank's offering, as well as the holistic product set, make us really unique versus our competitors.
I know many years ago when I started in payments, I was at Chase Payment Tech, obviously the payments division of JP Morgan. And sort of the strategy was, hey, a business comes into a branch back then they couldn't do it online, but today I assume you could. You open a checking account and then we tried to sell them merchant services. So there was sort of this path that we kind of walked a company through, right? And then you could offer them, you know, a business credit card or whatever it might be. I mean, do you see that today as like a checking account as like the core product, or you see it much different today?
Actually, it's another great point, but I think something also that's a little different today than it used to be. So I think to your point, the first point of contact for cross-selling or for growing a relationship was always typically, to your point, let's say the checking account. So who needed a bank account? They didn't have a bank. They were a startup business needed a bank account. And then over time, you would layer in things like cards, or maybe you'd layer in a loan product, and maybe ultimately they would need other services, payment services. I think for us today, the way we set up our technology and our platform doesn't really matter. Someone can come to us today and say, hey, they want to process payments. And then tomorrow can say, you know what? We want to offer a loan program for our customers. For us, we're actually agnostic, and the technology is set up in such a way where the incremental products that we add on don't really require that much more effort. It's simply just more diligence on our side. So I think that actually has changed, and that's shifting in general. specifically for Cross River, I think that the way we built our platform, our sales platform, our technology platform, is actually specifically to avoid having to care about how they come to us. Once they come to us, we can then continue to offer new products to them once they need it.
Yeah. And I also want you to touch on, if you can, maybe a little bit around sort of the compliance and the safety of the bank, because that's a big topic these days, right? We're seeing, you know, there's some negative news out there. I'm not going to talk about it, but, you know, but it's important to people to understand, you know, that value of coming to someone like Cross River.
Yeah, that's an important question. And yeah, it's not the most interesting or exciting topic to talk about. At the same time, it's one of the most important. If you are a platform who wants to work with a bank and not become a bank yourself and not be licensed yourself, you have to think about the right bank partner. And the right bank partner means making sure that both you and they are on the same page about how to attack the market from a compliance standpoint. Because the reality is, the expectations of regulators today are higher than they've ever been. For whatever reason, and I don't want to get into the politics of it, but there has been an attack on this fintech non-bank partnership. And I think that when we think about how we cope with that, we could sit here and start complaining about it and say, oh, we feel they're being too harsh, or we feel they're being, you know, onerous as far as the requirements. And part of that may be true. At the same time, I think our approach is more, okay, we have to comply with it. So what do we have to do? What do we have to do to elevate our game to make sure we're complying with those regulations, to make it a competitive advantage? So to give you an example, we had specifically something with fair lending with our regulators. So we looked at it and we said, okay, we have a fair lending improvement we have to make in our program. Should we just solve the problem, or should we build something to make sure that when we come out of this problem, we have the best solution in the market, which will put us ahead of others going forward? And so that's what we did. We built an API that will ultimately enable fair lending to be done in a much more unique and customized fashion with the data sets that we have, and should enable scale going forward. Now, they may not help us today, but we view that as a competitive advantage now. And so I think that can be applied to all of the recent news on AML and on model risk management, all the hot topics that the regulators are covering. The question we think about is, okay, we have to comply with a more rigorous regulatory review in those specific areas. But when we look to solve that attention that they're giving it, we look to solve it in a way that will give us a competitive advantage going forward, and will enable us to grow in a way where it won't require the same level of manual intervention and the number of people we have to staff. And so we think about it as, how can we make compliance a competitive advantage going forward?
Yeah, well, I appreciate you answering that. So when we look at just the payments portion of sort of what you offer, where do you see that heading, say, in the next 3 to 5 years?
Yeah, it's an important question. I mean, the easy answer is quicker, easier, more seamlessly. And I think that if you think about it, it's almost like the music industry, right? I remember as a kid, and I'm sure you do as well, not knowing how old you are, but we had cassettes, right? Mm-hmm. And I remember when I think I was in junior high school when CDs came out, right? And how long were CDs out for before they had MP3s? And now with MP3s, everything's, you know, digital and it's online. Like the speed at which things change just accelerated so quickly. It's very similar in the payment space. So for years, it was like, okay, you sent a wire, right? And they're working on making wires better. And then ACH was available, and, you know, ACH became same-day ACH. And as soon as same-day ACH came out, then you had very quickly, you had RTP, and now you have FedNow. And so what we're seeing is the acceleration of faster payment rails is really proliferating in the market. Cross River specifically was able to adapt to that very quickly. We were the first bank, certainly of our size, to be able to offer RTP through our own core, the same with FedNow. If you look at the banks who offer those products, they were much bigger than us. And so we've been able to stay with those, that changing tide, and enable those products really, really fast. And so for us, what we think about is, how quickly can we keep up with the change, the requirements that customers have to speed up those transactions? So when I think about what the future of payments looks like, to me, there's two things that come to mind. One, faster. How can we get folks money faster? I think cost is a big consideration. So if faster means it's 3 or 4x the cost of an ACH, probably not going to last long term. But as that cost starts to come down, when you start achieving scale, then it's a no-brainer, and people will offer RTP or FedNow over an ACH. In addition, I think there's two other parts I think are important to focus on. One is the interoperability of those products. Can we create smart routing? And Cross River has been able to, we actually had an announcement on this, I think 2 weeks ago, enable interoperability between FedNow and RTP. So when you come in to Cross River and you want to process a payment, you actually can choose the rail live. And if one doesn't work, the other one will work. And so like those are really important for us because it speaks to the same demand for quick technology that enables faster payments, but also interoperability. In addition, I think the ability to use products internationally. So we have products like Push to Card, which will enable international transactions, and it's the same product domestically. So as we know, ACH is really a domestic product versus an IUT, which is somewhat international, but the demand for products that can be used across geographies. So I think it's the speed, it's the geography that these payments will support, and I think it's the cost of these payments as we grow.
Okay, great. So let's switch gears a little bit and talk about you. So maybe walk us through your journey, graduate college, first job, how did you get to Cross River, and then how did you get to the role you're in today?
That's a fascinating story, actually. So maybe rewind a little bit. Graduated college, I think it was in 2001. First job out of college was actually working at a mortgage bank, and I was underwriting loans for their mortgage banking division. I did that for about 3 years or 3.5 years. Then I actually went to pursue a job as an analyst at a rating agency. Now you have to know exactly where we were in the context of time. This is the peak of the mortgage market. This was back in 2005 or 2006, and mortgages were becoming cheaper. They were becoming more exotic, and people started to create these securities, and subprime became a bigger topic of conversation, and the mortgage market was booming. Housing market was booming, and I saw that market just go to levels that were just unfathomable at a point in time. And then fast forward, 2008, the crisis hit. And people realize that these mortgages that they package and taking bad loans and packaging them as CDOs doesn't make them better loans. And so that market blew up. And so going from the mortgage bank to a rating agency focused on mortgages and then seeing an opportunity to lend in a market where nobody was lending, I actually met the current CEO of Cross River, who's actually my neighbor at the time, who was also the CFO, coincidentally, of that first mortgage bank that I worked for. So he approached me about starting the bank in early 2008. And over the course of the next 3 to 4 months, we put together a team of 5 people and we opened the bank in June of 2008 with a very small staff. And I think what we thought at the time was the mortgage market is frozen. Nobody's lending. It was a really opportune time to be opening a bank. And it turned out to be true. What we didn't realize was that the initial business plan of the bank was going to change dramatically. What I mean by that is that we initially came into it thinking we were going to offer commercial mortgages, residential mortgages, because nobody else was lending. What we realized over time was that wasn't going to be super scalable. It still was very manual. The technology wasn't advanced. And so very quickly we said, hey, how can we leverage this bank charter that we have to offer loans at scale, deposits at scale? And so we met a company based in Atlanta, GreenSky, and they were our first, what I'll call today, fintech partner. They had a platform with the Home Depot where they were financing all the at-home services that the Home Depot offered. And that was our first realization of, hey, with the same technology, the same core, the same infrastructure, we can offer direct loans, but we can also offer the ability for technology platforms to lend. Let them acquire the customer, which they're really, really good at, and let us handle all the compliance and regulatory infrastructure, which banks are good at. So it was actually a perfect partnership. So after that realization, we then branched out and we started building a number of lending platforms. After a year or so, we started thinking about how can we go beyond lending? And that really created the opportunity in payments. From payments, we expanded to cards. From cards, we expanded to deposits. And so I think it was an early realization at the bank of how can we take the same exact platform and do it at scale? And as we built our own technology, we realized if we built the right technology and assemble the right team, we can offer all the same products, yes, direct to market, but also offer it through others who have a really, really unique acquisition strategy. And so that enabled the bank to get to scale and brought us to where we are today.
Yeah, I'm glad you explained that because when you first said you started a bank in 2008, I was thinking, like, why would you do that? But you explained it well. So I think our audience will understand that was a crazy time back then.
Yeah, it was definitely a crazy time. And I remember thinking at the time that, wow, the world's falling apart. And I think what you realize over time is that there are definitely different cycles. And we're seeing a cycle now. And I think having that experience of 2008, I think gives us a different perspective as to what will come out of this current economic downturn.
Yeah. Well, what are some things you're passionate about? So maybe one business-related passion and one personal passion.
So for me, I think one business-related passion is serving the customer. A really big focus of ours is how can we be a better partner? For us, I always like to distinguish between, and maybe it's my own differentiation, maybe I heard it somewhere, I can't remember where I heard it, but I always think about the difference between a partner and a client. And a client is someone who you do business with, but it's sort of a cold relationship. They need something, right? You need something. We want to make money. They need to offer a product. It's great synergy. And you'll work together for years and things go fine and everyone gets what they need. That's not a partnership. A partnership is how can we continue to build trust amongst each other and expand the relationship in a way which is symbiotic. And everyone not only gets what they need, but they thrive and they grow. And so to me, that's a really important distinction. So when I think about how to build my team and what to imbue in them as far as the approach to what we do and how we can differentiate ourselves versus our competitors, I think about that client-partner differentiation. And if I could have one goal for our bank, is to build really, really strong partnerships and to build fewer clients. So that's from a business standpoint. From a personal standpoint, it's hard to take the focus away from my children. I have five of them, and they're amazing, each in their own way, and they're all really unique. But I think that for me, it's about how can I raise my family to really understand what life is all about. And life's not about monetary gain and monetary growth. It's really about quality of life, quality of family, being good to others, and then reciprocating back to you. I think to me, if I can give that lesson to my children of just be good to others, and they'll obviously reciprocate, grow, and grow in what you love, to me, that's success. I don't have any other passions that are greater than that. I can enjoy running. I certainly enjoy eating ice cream. But I think for me, it's not about anything, you know, that is too material. It's about raising children in, to me, the way that I think is appropriate.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks for sharing that. So final question, and I always like to get everyone's kind of viewpoint because I think you bring different things from your experiences. If someone came to you and they said, hey, Adam, I'm interested in going into payments or fintech or financial services, and maybe they're right out of college and they're looking to build a career in this space, what would you tell them they need to do to be successful?
So maybe I'll take two different approaches to answer the question. I'll take the individual, I'll take the company. From an individual standpoint, if you're someone coming out of college and you want to be in the fintech space, you have to ask yourself why. Like, what about fintech appeals to you? Is it the scale of fintech? Is it the monetary gain, perhaps, from fintech? What about fintech appeals to you? And I think it's about making sure that when you say you want to do something, you know why you want to do it. I remember when I was in college, everyone seemed to be making money in real estate. And you ask every kid in my class, and they say, what do you want to do? I want to be in real estate. Why? Because everyone was making a lot of money. But you really want to do real estate? Is that really your passion? Do you think you can make a difference there? Are you good at it? I think people don't necessarily understand why they want to do something. So if someone tells me they want to do something, I'll ask them back, why do you want to do it? So I think that someone who would say to me, I want to go into fintech, I would just ask them why. And then I would kind of drill in further to understand, if you understand the why, then the how becomes a lot easier. Mm-hmm. So to me, that's the approach I would take from an individual standpoint. From a company standpoint, which I think is what I deal with most of my day, is that when a company comes to us and they say, we want to be in fintech. We want to enable product A, call it a loan. We want to enable a payment. We want to enable a deposit product. I say to them, okay, tell me about your company. What makes you different? There's a ton of companies out there today offering the same exact product. What makes you unique? Who are your competitors? So to me, it's about, I think both cases, the thematic or the common theme between both of them is, what makes you different? Why do you want to do this? And how can you be successful? I think if you can answer those questions, like I said, if you know the why, then the how becomes a lot easier.
Yeah, I totally agree, both on the personal and business side. I think that's a great way to view it. So Adam, we've covered a lot of ground already about you and obviously the company and the industry as a whole. Is there anything else you'd like to cover before we wrap up the show?
No, I think we covered a lot. I'm really, really, really excited to be here. I really thank you for having me. And I would just leave off with this message that I think the fintech industry, even though there's been a lot of growth, is still somewhat in the infancy, just from the sense that I think that there'll be a time where even the regulators will realize that this is actually a great partnership, that the idea of having platforms who are really good at UX, customer experience, acquisition, and having banks who they can then oversee and monitor all the activity done in every different vertical is actually a really, really good model. I do believe that. It will take time to get there, But I think we'll see a lot of growth once that happens. So I'm excited for the future.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to wrap up the show. So Adam, thank you so much for being on today. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for having me.
And to all you listeners out there, I thank you for your time as well. And until the next story.
Thank you for joining us this week on the Leaders in Payments podcast. Make sure you visit our website at leadersinpayments.com, where you can subscribe to the show and where you'll find our show notes. If you enjoyed listening, please share on your social channels as well.